The Six Pointer Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Six Pointer Podcast. Very special edition of the pod. I think I say that every time we start this podcast, but it is a special edition because we are on location. On location, we are in... we're in Poland. I'm going to let you tell
Ladzław. Ladzław is where we are, yeah.
Wroclaw.
It's pronounced Ladzław. We're here to watch a game in the Polish Premier League this evening. So, obviously, we're doing our rounds at the pubs, trying the local Polish beers. And what we got here, bro? We've got a Pilsen and a lager, which I thought were the same thing. Apparently not. But 2 pints. How much was that?
I think we paid £2.20 for them two together. Not per pint together. Yeah. It was a good purchase, I can probably say. We've been to a Harry Potter themed pub by accident, which is not what we meant to do, but ended up in a basement somewhere, and that was quite interesting. I think we didn't realise it was Harry Potter until after we'd started our drinks. Yeah. So doing the pod on tour. As you say, we're going to a game tonight, 8:15 kickoff, 7:15 UK time. So it doesn't mean we're missing the Palace game today, but we thought as we're touring the pubs in Poland, we thought we'd check in on the pod. It's obviously been a little while since we've spoken, a couple of months now, which is scary to think. But we've not made it to many games together this season, have we? We've watched a few away games together, but we've not sort of made it to many games. So, I think we've had one so far, right? I think also we've been busy, right? You've been on holiday, I've been on holiday, other things going on, but also symptomatic a little bit of how this season's felt so far.
Yeah, that's a good point, bro. I think it's felt a little bit like a bit of a damp squib so far this season, isn't it? It's not been great. I think I said to you earlier, I think there was a huge delta in the way that we were playing last season and the way that we've been playing this season, mainly in the sense that that's what I'd say, bro. The energy and the intent and, just the application of the performance. I think for me, the Tottenham game this season I went to, it felt like the first time that I saw us really having that energy and that oomph and that sort of desire that I think's been missing in too many games this season. We've been too easy to play against, too easily beaten, and when we were behind, not threatening enough. I think we've just been too easy to play against, and I think perhaps we've been found out a little bit, or the tactics have been found out a little bit.
I think there's probably not a number of factors at play there, aren't there? Because if you think about it, a number of our top players, our main players, obviously our main player left, our main attacking threat anyway, and then you know the likes of Walton, Ezza and Gaye, who you could argue are sort of the core three focal points of the team and give us that creativity, give us that opportunity on the ball to get forward, and obviously solidity at the back, had long summers. And I think a combination of those four players, including the one that departed, has meant that we have had a bit of a slow start. I think you're right, it's definitely something in the lethargic sense in Palace's start to the season. I think I said to you earlier, didn't I, if I'm thinking about the difference between last year, the stark difference is Palace's intent to press and put people on the back foot. And I remember the Villa game, obviously it stands like a sore thumb because of the scoreline, but that Villa game ended last season, we were all over them in their half. You know, it was any time they had the ball within the our final third, but in their back third of the pitch, if that makes sense, we were on them and pushing them, and I think we even got a couple of goals from mistakes that day. So, you know, that's what's been lacking for me, and I do wonder if there's a little bit of tiredness. Obviously, particularly in the recent weeks, injuries have started to tot up, and you know, we are big fans of listening to Adam Sells on the FYP podcast, and he talks about the fact that in a squad you'll always have sort of what is it, 5-6 members of the squad injured, and we're feeling that, aren't we, in many extents at the minute. So I think a number of factors come together. It's not been good, but there have been in recent weeks positive signs with the Tottenham performance, not just the result, but also with the Villa cup win as well.
Yeah, and injuries obviously are symptomatic of having a squad as small as we have done.
Yeah.
And there's arguments for and against loaning out players like Jezrat Saki, obviously, who's was doing quite well in the Championship, which is what, you know, he needs to do. And I think we need to let him see out his loan. I know there's been talk around sort of recalling him and things like that in January, but I don't think that'll be good for his progression, because, you know, he comes back and perhaps, you know, gets a few minutes here and there for the bench, whereas he's, you know, starting games in the Championship, which is what we need him to do. And then hopefully, if he can prove himself at that level, he can do the business next season for us. But yeah, I think for us, I feel, you know, going into a season with only Jean-Philippe Mateta and Eddie Nketiah as your main out-and-out strikers is leaving us very light. I think sort of winger-wise, you know, we play these wide wing-backs, and, you know, should Tyrick Mitchell or Daniel Munoz get an injury, where we're kind of stuffed there, you know, I appreciate we've still got like Kleine and Ward, but not really of the sort of lyricism that those current players have. And yeah, I think we're still struggling to sort of shoehorn players in, like Dimitri Kamada, who I don't know that we've seen the best of him yet. I don't know where he fits within this system. I think there's a lot of talk around them expecting sort of Eze to go in the summer, and it didn't happen. So, you know, we're trying to sort of fit him in as well as Eze, and perhaps that unbalances the squad a little bit. But yeah, this make no bones about it, bruv. The way that we ended last season, the ambition and the target that was put on the squad, we're falling massively behind, and it's been a disappointing start.
It's a classic Palace, isn't it? In a sense that the end of last season was an opportunity to build, and we didn't take the opportunity because we lost arguably our best player in the summer, and we didn't replace him, and we didn't add to and supplement. So the Nketiah signing is an interesting one for Palace perspective, because it's a lot of money. And you could argue, did we need him? Because if Mateta was firing, you could argue that is our number nine. Now, having said that, Nketiah clearly have bought him to start, so he's being shoehorned into a team where, you know, when JP plays, he seems to be, well, JP can't play out wide, whereas Nketiah can put a shift in. And I've been quite impressed with his work rate. However, we're clearly not playing to his strengths, and I think that's kind of a classic example of us signing someone who does improve the squad, does improve the starting 11, but isn't quite where he should and needs to be at his peak and to Palace to reap the benefits. I just want to pick on one point you made about Rakitić. I think we are also feeling the consequence there of, you know, he had the Charlton loan, what was that, 3 years ago now? Last year should have been then the progression to the Championship, shouldn't it, on the loan, but then he had the injury or injuries, and it meant he didn't get that opportunity, kind of had a few goes in the first team running around it. Man United away cup game, I think he came on a couple of cameos at home as well, if I remember rightly. But yeah, I think there's a few circumstances there, but I think you're right, him seeing out the Championship loan is definitely the way to go. But yeah, we've had a few sort of circumstances not go away, but I think the threadbare nature of the squad has meant that we're feeling the impact and hit of that at the minute, and today is a prime example of that.
So going back to what you said there, in terms of obviously Palace have lost one of their best players, obviously arguably best player, Michael Olise, that has to be surely seen as a huge failing on the club as a whole, because a club like Crystal Palace always has to be prepared to lose a player like that. You know, it was always, I guess it was inevitable that, you know, whether it been this summer, this gone, or in the January window or whatever, he was going to go, right? Yeah. So the fact that the club didn't have not a replacement, because I don't think you could replace
him.
Yeah, you didn't have someone next in line to come into that. And I guess, really, if you're talking about out-and-out right-wingers, Rakitić would have been that. He's not necessarily ready, right? So you need to bring someone back in, don't you? And we haven't filled that gap. It just led to us to say, like, filling holes in you know, what is it, square pegs, round holes, whatever it is.
Yeah, I strongly believe that we are missing someone who can take people on. I know Saar can play a role in that extent in terms of being that sort of the man to get the ball and run with it, but I don't think so far from what I've seen of him in a Palace shirt, he hasn't typically taken people on and kind of, yeah, got to the byline and that kind of stuff. And I just think that's really one of the key areas we're missing. I mean, I think we've got an unfortunate set of suspensions and injuries today, because in a central midfield you normally say we're quite blessed with strength. If you think about the likes of Lerma, Decore, Hughes, Walton, you know, four players there Yeah, well, I'm just thinking of those four sort of solid players, but then you say more attacking players like Kamali, kind of blessed with opportunities there. Today is a prime example of where a series of injuries and suspensions means that isn't the case. But I think in the attacking part of the team, that is where January, I think they're going to have to spend some money. I can't see not having to spend some money, because I think we're going to be in and around where we are now, which is not a comfortable place to be. And I know you and I have different views about the management setup. I think he is a good man to take Palace forward. I think he, with the right squad, he can do that. I kind of guess I'd counter my point there, in that I've been concerned about his comments about a 25 man element to it, and I think Palace should be looking to have a very strong 25 with the youth players on top. It feels at the minute that we're counting those youth players within the mix, but the youth players aren't being counted as those starters. They're just there to kind of make up the numbers on the bench, including two keepers.
So you say that you and I have different views on the manager. I mean, it's not binary. Like, it's not that you are for and I'm against. It's not that case. I just, personally, I'm struggling to see what is there that's living up to this hype, living up to this optimism. Like, I get, you know, in the last season, fair enough, we had a very good run. That was excellent football, very enjoyable. But you need to be consistent, and you need to look beyond a seven-game run of games sort of thing. And I think where you've had such a huge gulf in those performances in the last season and then how we started this season, I was slightly concerned, say 5-6 games in, that we were struggling to adapt our style, that we've been, we've been found out. There was a bit of there was a lethargic nature around the way that we were playing. And often when you see that in football, it's that the players aren't responding to the methods, or perhaps something isn't right in training. And that's where my mindset was going, really, is that we were sort of 5-6 games in, and I was thinking, bloody hell, bruv, you know, we're going to get cut adrift here if we carry on down this route. And part of me was thinking, you know, I had the Tottenham game, or perhaps maybe the Tottenham game, because given the opponent, but I said before going into that Tottenham game, we certainly needed to see a better performance. And then had we not won the Tottenham game, and then not won the Wolves game, which we didn't, we drew the Wolves game, I think the Tottenham game has not papered over the cracks, but it's given them a bit more breathing space. But had we not got those 3 points, I think we'd be having a very different conversation right now.
Maybe. I think it's a combination of factors, isn't it? I mean, I think there's an element of circumstance. And as I said to you, I believe that the lethargic element to things could well be down to the fact that those players who are so key and central to Palace's starting 11 have even not been there, Alisse, or knackered, because they... I know people say, oh, so-and-so didn't play in the Euros in the summer, but they still would have been training day in, day out to be ready. Yeah, but physically as well, you're training to start for England in the Euros. Adam Walton was hoping to get a game. He wasn't messing around, like, sitting there on a blooming sunbed while other people were watching people. He was training at full extent to be selectable. You know, you don't go to the Euros as a player like that to just make up the numbers. So, no, he didn't start, but he was still training to an extent to get to a position to start. So, you know, we've got a bunch of people there, like I mentioned, who probably are tired, and therefore there's a lethargic element to things. Maybe there's also the extent that if those players are not 100%, maybe others aren't going to raise their game. I think it's twofold, bruv. I think everything you said is very valid. Motivation, don't know, not on the inside, but probably an element. But also, I think tiredness probably an element, and not signing the players we could have done. And I think it's a lot. It's typical Palace. It's we could be, but we're not. Yeah, and it's across the board. It's not just with one person. It lies across multiple decisions and circumstances. And I think what is a shame for me is what was in our control was to bring others in, to have, regardless of what you say about who left, the production line, the inverted commas model, is supposed to be to have the next one in line, and we haven't got that in the Elise position.
I guess difficult to do when you talk about the whole John Texter situation, a man who clearly has showed that he wants out, you know, a man who was bidding for another football club in Chelsea and Everton. No, it was Harrison Bitzer in the last summer, wasn't it, in Chelsea, and then Texter this sort of last few months in Everton. So I guess there's the sort of the reluctance from those owners to back and put their money where their mouth is in that sense, because, you know, if they want out, why would they? I think also there has to be a conversation around this small squad, and are these players not being pushed enough because there isn't the competition for faces? Therefore, Jean-Philippe Mateta knows that he's really going to have a real 10-game stinkers to be dropped, you know, for the only other player that can play in this position, let's face it, is Eddie Nketiah. I mean, we can talk about the transfer window a little bit later. Maybe we should have a break and finish these beers and whatever. But, yeah, I think there is work to do there in January. Obviously not an ideal time to do it. But I think there is perhaps a conversation around lack of competition, lack of players feeling that they need to not up their game, because obviously they're in the Premier League and they want to perform their best. But there's something to be said for being in the training ground week in, week out, seeing someone else who is, you know, vying for your position, and almost subconsciously thinking, okay, right, I have to up my game here. And if that isn't there, if that element isn't there, perhaps there is a level of comfort, or I don't know what the word is, bro. Maybe the beer's getting to me, but you know, something which isn't pushing these players on to the next level, and that might well attribute to that sort of lack of energy or lack of, you know, I think I found it very difficult coming out of that Nottingham Forest game. Yeah. That, you know, when we were chasing the game, I was seeing far too many players walking around the pitch. There was a lack of urgency, a lack of desire, and that really worried me, because let's face it, we've got a lot of players on you know, sizable wages. You know, I think Eze, Kamada, I don't know what JP's on, and Kessie is probably not coming on the pittance. Dean Henderson, you know, these sort of players are being paid a fair whack, and that's not to say they're not performing, but they're certainly not performing to the level that they should be. And I just think we as a fan base probably expect a little bit more.
I guess what's frustrating as well is, if you look at the run of results we've had, they've all been near misses, really. I mean, a few points in the mix there. Obviously, the Chelsea game was a very good second half, not so much first half. The Leicester game, I kind of felt we should have won that, but, you know, took a last minute equaliser, didn't it, for us to get there.
Well, it's the run of games, rather, as well. If you looked at this run of games at the start of the season, right, Palace have played Brentford the start of the first game of the season, you would have thought that, you know, you want at least a point there, because it's a away game, right? I appreciate that. What was next? West Ham. Okay, fair enough. West Ham. What was next?
After West Ham, you had Liverpool at home game.
Right.
I think, to be fair, we lost that, rightly so. Yeah. You know, the Forest game, I don't know, bruv. Look at the run of results they're on. They're in good form. The Tottenham game's a good result. We beat Villa in the cup, and then the Wolves. The Wolves one was a disappointing one, for the extent that we were in lead. But if you think about it, it was a 6-pointer for them. Whether it was for us or not is a.
I just think of it in the sense that Brentford, Leicester, Wolves, Forest, Palace need to be taking more points out of those games, especially when with the whole speak in the last season around, or start this season around, pushing into the top half. You know, Parrish was even saying about challenging for a European place. Those sort of games, Palace need to be picking up more points than they did. So justifiably, I think there was criticism of that.
I think December is an interesting month for Palace, because of the, we've got the top of the table teams like the Man Cities and the back-to-back Arsenal games and doing the cup game in there. But then we've got three arguably games who are people who we should be very competitive with in Ipswich, Bournemouth and Southampton. So I think that's going to be a very interesting month, Palace. Maybe a bit of a telltale, actually, to what happens in January.
Yep.
Because January is another repeat of that, in the sense you've got to play Leicester and West Ham and Brentford again, as well as Chelsea. So I think yeah, not the start we wanted to the season, but a bit like today's beer purchase in here, right? There's promise there.
Lots of promise. Lots of promise at £2 a pint, or whatever it is, or £2 for 2 pints.
Yeah. So look, let's
get a refill.
Let's get a refill. We'll have to pace this a bit, both from the pub perspective and from the.
Let's go full on, mate. You're only in Poland once, aren't you?
Well, what's kickoff? Kickoff's in what, 6 hours?
Yeah, exactly. Is it that's, 6 hours? That's at least the number 16 beers.
Yeah. Well, it might be at this rate. Anyway, at 6 Pointer Podcast, Instagram and Twitter. Got to fit that in because we didn't do the intro. We'll have a pause now. I'm back with you for part two. Hello and welcome back to part two of the Six Pointer podcast. It's a bit delayed, the part two here, so I'm going to apologise in advance, but it does enable us to do something quite different, which is, firstly, reflect on the game that we talked about in part one, which has now been and gone. So that's part of a special edition here. But also, we have a special guest who's joined us. So myself, Matthew, joined by Luke as always, and joined by the man who probably asks the most questions on the pod, Tom. Tom, how are you doing? Welcome to the pod, your debut.
I am extremely excited to be on the pod this week. Long-time listener, first-time contributor, and massive fan of you boys. You know, we go back, me and Matthew, just a bit of context here. We go back to the age of four. So we've known each other for 36 years, which is pretty impressive, really. So really, really pleased to be here with you boys, back in London for one night only.
And Tom, a bit of an introduction to you then. Your first Palace game or first Palace memory?
Oh my goodness, put me on the spot here. So first Palace match was in 93 against Ipswich. I saw Eric Young score a goal with his bandana on, and Palace won 3-1. And then I think that same season I went to my first game with Matthew. I'm going to stretch who we saw play that year. Goodness me. But since then, Matthew, Luke and I have been to see goodness knows how many matches together. Unfortunately, I moved to the West Country back in 2005. And since then, it's been very limited in terms of how many games I've seen. But I'm still a very massive Crystal Palace supporter.
But because of that, we've been able to do quite a few West Country adventures, right? So we did Cardiff in the League Cup semi-finals, didn't we?
2011.
Yeah. We've done Bristol Rover, Bristol City in the playoffs.
Birmingham City.
Birmingham, Villa. Yeah.
Villa in the League Cup. Yeah. Emil Heskey scored against us. And we lost.
John Carew.
John Carew, yeah, and Heskey, they both scored against
us. We didn't come with you, but you went to the Bristol Rovers in the Cup game. We lost on penalties.
Yes. Yeah,
I don't know when that was, but
we won on penalties. Dougie Freeman scored the winner.
Yeah,
Freeman.
We lost. So there was two different Rovers games. One we lost, and one we won. Yeah, that was that must have been a game early 2000s.
So there you
go. Of course, also we had a season to get together in the White Horse in 2001.
Yeah, Trevor Benjamin.
Yeah, Trevor Benjamin. Trevor Francis era, and then also in the Premier League in 2005, 2006, yeah. 2004, 2005.
Nicola Ventola.
Yeah, Ventola, and who else? Who was our manager then? That was Ian Dowie. And I remember one of my claims to fame was having a beer with Ian Dowie in the Beckenham.
In a box bar.
Is it called Box Bar now?
Yeah, no, it's called Kelsey House now. It was called Box Bar.
Flatfoot Sam's.
I remember you called me up and you said, I've just been in the pub with Ian Dowie. I was like, you call me when you're in the pub with Ian Dowie.
I was giving Ian Dowie advice. I used to play in goal. That was my position. I was giving him advice because he was playing Gabor Kirai at the time, at the start of that season. And I fancied Julian Speroni. I thought Speroni was a decent keeper. I liked what I saw of him. He made a couple of mistakes in his debut against Everton, I think, and we lost 3-1 in our first game that season. And I remember having quite a long, in-depth conversation about Ian Dowie that evening. And he said, you know what, Speroni, best shot stopper I've ever seen, but just lacks that Premier League experience. And Kirai's got that little bit more experience, a little bit more know-how. But, of course, we all know how that game played out, so I was right.
Well, he listened to you so much that we were Scott Flinders. So... very, very important. But also,
hang on a minute, Scott Flinders was after the event.
I know, I'm just taking a piss. But yeah, look, we're here in the Cross Keys in London, central London, because Tom is visiting from the Uar country. So, pleasure to have you here, Tom. And a rare opportunity to get your opinions on Daichi Kamada, of course. Among other things, but Matthew, where are we taking this one?
Well, I think you're taking over hosting it. You're running this thing, mate. No, I thought we'd reflect on. I mean, look, for listeners, it's quite a bit confusing because 2 minutes ago we're in Poland, sipping various beers and talking about Palace's forthcoming trip. It was Fulham. Game against Fulham. It was home, wasn't it? It was Fulham. We were away in Poland. And now here we are in part two, talking about post-day game and talking about 1993, Palace Ipswich 3-1. But
we've had an international break in that time as well, so obviously given us a bit of opportunity to reflect and an opportunity to look back on how this season has gone so far, which we touched on in part one, has been quite disappointing, I guess. But I guess it's interesting to get Tom's view, isn't it? Because as someone who's not been to many games, and I guess, Tom, when you can, you can stream the games, and when you can't, you're watching a match of the day and see some highlights. But how would you summarise sort of the season so far? Like, what are your feelings?
So from my perspective, I think I've been surprised. I think it's probably the best way of putting it. I've been surprised about how disjointed the team has looked. How we haven't really been playing as a unit. It's looked like 11 different players on the pitch. The new players haven't really integrated, and I'd just be surprised about how last season we ended on such a high, and I amongst a lot of Palace fans, I think we're kind of thinking that we could be pushing above our 10th position, and frankly we just haven't achieved that, and all of my football friends, you know, in the West Country, you know, when we talk football, we talk Palace. They're all very surprised as well. I think Palace. Someone said even to me today that they were, you know, Crystal Palace are one of the biggest surprises. That, you know, our results this season have been one of the biggest surprises, because frankly, on paper, we still got a very good team. You know, but when you put our injuries alongside our performances, alongside some of the lack of gelling with the new players, frankly. It's been a surprise, and I you know, genuinely feel like we need to be patient. I think patience is key. As a Palace fan, lifelong Palace fan, patience has always been important. I still think we've got enough, and I still think there's three teams worse than us that will go down, but I do think this is going to be one of our biggest consolidation seasons in the last 10 or 11 years since we've been in the Premier League.
Well, you touched on a couple of points there that you won't be privy to that we spoke about in part one. So we talked about the delta between last season and this season in terms of the performances and the results. You know, we talked about the expectation, and there was talk around sort of pushing this club to the next level and taking it up beyond that sort of 10th position that we finished last season. And obviously, you know, the opportunity that Matthew spoke about in part one as well, and the opportunity to push on. And it was typical Palace to miss the opportunity to push on, you know, getting the money we did for Michael Lise, not reinvesting that back in the squad in the way that we should have done, not replacing him, but finding someone in that sort of role that could fill that position that we haven't done, and we're ruining that now, really, aren't we? That which is the situation we're in. And as you said, Matthew, you know, prior to the break we were talking about, before the Fulham game, we had the ability to sit in a lovely restaurant in Poland and have a free course meal and a few beers and watch that on the stream. It wasn't a great game, let's be honest, and it comes back to kind of what I was saying, you know, that look at the start, the performance we've had this season, Leicester, Forest, Brentford, now Fulham. Palace have got to be taking more points than they have out of these games.
I think we overachieved last year, didn't we, based on having two very, very special players available consistently in that run that we had under Glasner and having them on form. And I think this year has shown that the absence of one and the absence of form in another has hit us, and we haven't supplemented and added any sort of cover in those areas. That means that when those players aren't on form and can't turn it on, we can't turn it on. And I think, to Tom's point, I don't disagree that at the end of last season you'd expect Palace to push on, but then what happened with departures and lack of joiners, for a better term, arrivals, meant that we haven't pushed on. It's been fact, and that's what you've seen, I think, in the last, what is it, 12, 13 games, what we are in now.
So one thing I'm keen to get your opinion on, boys, is that I think one of our biggest losses this season, don't forget Michael Olise, we all know how a wonderful player he was. Genuinely feel like we are missing Jordan Ayew's ability and his leadership and his ability to pick the ball up and just take it out and defend from the front. And I think £5 million felt like good business in the summer. Right now it feels like awful business. I genuinely feel like, you look at his stats at Leicester, what he's done there since he's gone, I feel like that is the sort of player that we need in the team right now, and we're massively missing.
Yeah, I mean, look, take it in isolation, you know, what is it, $5 million for a player who had a year left in his contract, and he was 30, 31, 32 years old. It was good business, and if we're talking about this Palace model that we're supposed to be doing now these days, I guess it makes sense. But I think I even said to you, bruv, after the West Ham game, that first home game of the season, there were so many times where we missed someone doing that clever movement of the body between him and himself and the ball and winning those fouls, which enabled Palace to get sort of 10, 15 yards up the pitch. Not only that, enabled everyone to have a bit of a breather. You know, everyone had that ability to stop, reset, take a moment, reposition and restart. And without that sort of what I call football intelligence that we've lost within in the squad, and you can argue we've got quite a young squad now, and you're missing that a little bit of experience as well. I think that's been a huge miss. And yeah, obviously he's done very well for Leicester, and let's face it, as a Leicester fan, I'd be getting Jordan Ayew shirts left, right and centre at the moment, because he is, you know, one of their standout performers of the season, and probably, if they do survive the season, probably one of the main reasons they do so.
One of the things that rubbed it in for me the most was that my eldest boy, who's Ted, has got a Crystal Palace calendar on his wall, and October was Jordan Ayew, and I've had to look at Jordan Ayew every single day of last month and look at him and go, what could have been. I feel like he's an unsung hero. I think we underestimated how much that he did for us. His stats weren't, you know, amazing in terms of goal scoring, but I think if you look at the amount of fouls won and the amount of pressure he took off that defence, I just feel like that is something we are massively lacking at the moment. And you look at the players that we brought in, and you look at some of the midfield kind of replacements. Matt and Luke know that I'm not a big fan of Kamada, and for me, Kamada is the polar opposite of Ayew. He sort of seems to lack that football intelligence. He seems to lack the ability to win the foul. In fact, he's the opposite. He commits the foul, gets himself booked early, and then feels like, well, either gets himself sent off or is kind of on the back foot for the rest of the match.
Yeah, I think, to be fair, Tom, I mean, obviously we're talking after the Fulham game now, where he got himself sent off. And now he's got a three-game ban, and I actually don't think that's such a bad thing, given how much pressure's on him. Obviously, you know, there were talk about, obviously, the instances when he came off the field and the racial slurs that were thrown at him, which obviously is not what we're about as Crystal Palace club, and everyone, I think, who at the game would be very disappointed that was the case. And obviously, yeah, I mean, anyone who was a Crystal Palace fan should feel ashamed that happened at the game, but I think that provides us with an opportunity, and it provides him with an opportunity to reset, you know, perhaps take a little bit of pressure off him. Obviously we don't know what's going to happen in his next three games or what situation he's going to be in, but I think it's quite clear that he was being shoehorned into positions that he wasn't used to playing. I know, Tom, you're not his biggest fan, but clearly from a man who's played at Frankfurt, won the Europa League there, played at Lazio, he has got quality. He perhaps hasn't just been able to show it in this situation. Yeah. Perhaps he's overpressurised situation. So I think there is a good player there. He will come good. And let's hope that this three-game ban gives him the ability to come back and show his quality.
Yeah, he's been played all over the shop, hasn't he? He's been played in defensive midfielders positions, attacking midfielder positions, number 10, wing, whatever the winging attacker, whatever you call him, is a part of the front three. So, and I think, to be fair to the bloke, that's been difficult for him. Integration into English football. We've seen flashes of real brilliance from him. A couple of blinding goals. He likes a League Cup, which has been nice to see. But yeah, I don't disagree with Tom. It hasn't worked out so far. I think that the Jordan Ayew role is maybe bigger, actually, than you've alluded to, which is when you look at the stats, right? We have conceded 15 goals so far, right? How many goals have Man City conceded so far?
3-6.
13.
Okay.
The delta for us is goals scored.
Yeah. Goals scored.
Yeah, so we have scored 8 goals this season. I'm going to use my direct comparison. It's a terrible comparison, but Man City has scored 22. But even the likes of Newcastle, Villa, Tottenham mid-table have scored between 23 and 13 goals. And that has been the difference for us. I mean, the Jordan Ayew role gets us up the pitch. it wins us the fouls that we are not winning at the minute, which means we get the balls into the box we're not putting in the minute, which means Lateta gets a chance he's not getting in the minute. And I think all those things come together and take the Elise out of the dynamic as well. When that was where balls are coming into the box, you basically lost our two inlets to the box, which are free kicks and Elise's magic. Hence Mateta is not getting the goals he was last year. Hence Nketiah hasn't got the chance in the box he has been, despite being played in out of position. All those things come together, which our weakness for me, which is scoring goals. And I think that's where IU's absence is massively, massively underplayed.
I think, Bob, to be honest with you, I mean, I'd be interested to see, I mean, because look, Palace are in a relegation battle now here. Like it or not, I think, you know, we are looking at those around us, and I'd be interested to hear, you know, for those teams that are around us in that relegation battle, so I guess which is what, 20th to 15th at the moment, where are we in terms of goal scores? Who scored more goals than us in that situation? Have you got the stats in front of you now?
Everyone. Well, everyone bar Southampton, yeah. One goal less, so seven.
And that, there's a BBC News article in on today about Southampton sacking their manager, so, you know.
Whereas everyone else has conceded far more goals than us. Okay, Everton was 17, but everyone else in the 20s. And so that there is a direct comparison, and that's the thing. I think part of the problem is that the inflexibility to the formation does also seem to hamstring us. We need to be selecting the players and the formation that we have to work with, not working the other way around. And I think that's where we might have to see some flexibility from the manager to enable us to move forward.
There's that, bro, but there's also the fact the willingness to let Jez Ratzacki out on loan, yeah. Odson Ezwad out on loan, sell Jordan Ayew, and you brought in one player in Eddie Nketiah. I appreciate it's Ismail Assar, but you know, like, so I think that in January Palace are going to have to invest in the striker area or the attacking third area, as it were, and that's going to cost a lot of money in January. You know, January isn't the best time to be doing business. That's when you've got to be doing it. So Palace now are in a situation where you've got one owner who wants out, two owners who have showed interest in Chelsea and other clubs in the recent past. So somehow they've got to pull together and think, right, okay, if we can't sell our holding or not invest in this squad, hopefully they're thinking that our shareholding in this club is worth more than it is now, and it is a Championship club. So therefore, we dig deep. We've hold the Premiership status and go forward, but I expect this to be a busy summer for a busy January period for Palace.
Yeah, I mean the trouble is that at the moment there are a lot of teams after those players, you know. So what's going to make them want to come to Crystal Palace? And at the moment I'm struggling to see why. You know, if you're a player and you're looking at an exciting team in that bottom 10 or so, compared to Palace, who at the moment doesn't feel very exciting, doesn't feel like there's a much passion or kind of willingness to want to play for the club. What's going to draw them to the club? It's a real conundrum. You know, I don't see what the easy answer is. I don't see the quick fix. One thing I will say is, you know, if you look at Ratzacki, he's doing really good, really, really well at Sheffield United at the moment. So there is a question about whether or not, you know, should we, you know, shorten, you know, bring him back from loan, bring him back into the team, get him into the squad. I've always been a big fan of his. When he comes into Palace, he always wants to show his ability. I just wonder whether now is his time. You know, rather than looking elsewhere, rather than looking at another £20 million player, should we look more closely to home?
I mean, to be fair though, like over recent seasons, how many people can put their hands up and say they'd heard of Jean-Philippe Mateta before he joined Palace? Daniel Munoz, you know, I'm trying to think of others that we signed recently. Adam Walter, I mean, obviously he played the Championship, but not many people were linking him with Palace before he came here. You know, So there's many players that Palace have sort of, I guess, dug out of the blue. So you've got to have faith in Dougie Freeman and the sporting director and his team in terms of finding these players. But like we said, one thing is for sure is that there is going to have to be money found, because being a Premier League club, and in January a premium is put on that, and Palace are going to have to pay for the nose to get us out of the situation we found ourselves in.
Yeah, and I worry that the last few games have been a bit of a... a deviation from where we're at. So, you know, the Tottenham game, you could argue, a bit of a freak result. I mean, I know Tottenham are very generous to clubs like us who need a result. My Tottenham supporting friend told me in advance, you'd be surprised how generous Tottenham are.
Thanks very much.
We found them that way, didn't we? But then we had the Villa in the Cup game result. And then the real leveler for me was the Wolves game, where just took a mistake, we let them back into the game. And to be fair, we should have won that game.
Yeah.
Palace clearly should have been away from there at that game. And the fans were not behind them at all, and the reverse. And then obviously the last home outing against Fulham was... And we could have lost that 5 or 6-0. I mean, VAR saved us from being 4-0. It could have been far more than that. And I think that's the thing. The last two games have been a bit more of a leveler. I really said, check where we're at. And unfortunately, it comes down to the options that the manager has to select from.
So what's got to change here, boys? I mean, what do we think is the answer? We've been quite... opinionated in the last 10 minutes or so. I'm struggling to see what the answer is. You know, I know that the manager is very, very rigid around his system and his formation, but we are also really, really affected by a number of injuries. So I'm as a fan, as someone who, you know, follows Palace very closely, I am struggling to see what the answer is right now. I'm quite concerned. Yeah, more concerned than I've ever been since we've been in Premier League, frankly.
I think, if I'm honest, Palace have got a difficult run of games now. Obviously, Villa away on Saturday is a tough game. It'll certainly be a different proposition to the team that we played in the League Cup only a couple of weeks ago. I can only see Palace limping across the line here to get to January and then hoping for reinforcements. And I'd say the most important thing is that reinforcements come early in January. Palace have been very, historically, you know, trying to do a bit of brinkmanship and get the best deals towards the deadline day, but for us, you know, we need reinforcements at the start of January. And I do worry, I must admit, I said this to a friend recently, that it was only 8-9 years ago that Palace played Southampton on Boxing Day and we lost quite heavily, and Neil Warnock got the sack then. Palace played Southampton on, I think it's the 28th of December, and should Palace lose that game, you know, coming up, that might be curtains for the Glasner, depending on the results previously coming up to it. And you know, I don't know what the result, the games coming up to that look like, Brian, you've got them in front of you there, but there are certainly a few there that Palace needs to get maximum points out of. I mean, Ipswich is huge, the Brighton game is obviously a huge derby game, the cup game maybe is a bit of a distraction, Bournemouth is a huge game on Boxing Day, and then Southampton. So I mean, really, if you lose to Brighton, the two Arsenal games, lose to Bournemouth, I think Oliver Glasner will be gone by then. I think it's a results business, and as much as we all built into this project and the 7-game run that we had in the last season, it hasn't been good enough this season. And as much as you can say he's hamstrung by the squad, it's the manager's job to motivate the players that he has, to show that, to give them a bit of energy and attacking impetus that we've lacked this season. And if he can't do that, we won't see the Austrian in the Palace dugout.
I think we have to get to January and review it then. I don't think we can be saying that the manager will be gone before then, purely because, like you just said, he has the tools to work with. His toolbox is pretty empty. So I give him more time than that. I'm not quite sure bringing anyone in would have any difference, because they've got no more tools, no more chisels and hammers and pliers. And
Roy Hodgson had no more tools or chisels than Patrick Vieira when he took over, brother. And look at the difference there. It's all about, sometimes it's about a different voice and a different impact. I mean, yeah, I understand your point, but I think sometimes you get to a point where any change is better than none.
I think Roy inherited a DeWalt drill from Vieira, whereas someone inheriting from Glasner would be inheriting a home base special. Yeah,
I don't know.
I'm not unrealistic that a bad run of results in the Premier League means the manager goes, but I am realistic. I hope that, looking at what someone has to work with, the change a deviation in any realistic timescale, and without any trip to home base, B&Q or Screwfix
or Lidl's,
it's going to be quite limited. So I think we get to January, review it from there, but I'm 100% behind what you said, which is there is no choice but for Palace to invest. We lost some tools in the summer, we've got to buy them back.
And there's an interesting stat I'm looking at right now, which says that Palace have got this is an Opta stat, the hardest running of any club in towards Christmas.
Really?
Yep. Our run of fixtures compared to anyone else's is the hardest running.
Jesus Christ, I guess that's because we're playing Man City and Arsenal twice. Yeah. That's probably the Premier League games, isn't it?
This is up to stats, so other than Forest, we've got the hardest
run. So Villa, Newcastle, Ipswich, Man City, Brighton, Arsenal, Bournemouth, Southampton. So yeah, I mean, obviously post Christmas it gets a little bit easier, but those can become 9 points, or let alone 6 points at a time.
It doesn't give Glasgow an awful lot of leeway, does it? You look at that and you go, well, where do you see the points coming from? Well, Ipswich, that's the one team out of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 18 points. We can see another three. That'll put us on 10 points after 20 games. That is not good enough. That is relegation form.
A point a game keeps you up.
It is relegation form if you only get 3 points in that run-in. And I think that is the harsh reality of where we are right now.
I think Matthew's just turned to me and showed me the January fixtures. And for me, if you were going to write a story of a new manager coming in, right, just saying this, right, the Chelsea game, right, in the full fine, but then you've got Leicester, West Ham and Brentford. For a new manager coming in and playing those games, that's a dream, isn't it? Maybe that's what Palace might be facing. I hope not, because I want this to succeed with Glasner. I want the model and the system to work. But if you were going to write a story, it's there in the fixture list, isn't it? It's there for us.
I think we should ask our listeners to this, and maybe they can message in to at Six Pointer Podcast on Instagram and Twitter, and let us know your thoughts, because I'm a bit tired by the fact that the running is difficult. I'm not going to carry the tools analogy any further. The players that he's got to have are limited, and would making a change at the top actually have a difference? Just ask our listeners that, because I must personally admit I struggle to see the impact. The thing about last time round is that it got so toxic under Sir Roy that any change was needed, like anything was needed. And we got to the point where I said to you, I don't want to go, bruv, but it feels he has to go because he's necessitated amongst and around the club. And then obviously the players that we talked about earlier came back, and the runner games and the results came together. But I don't see a parallel here other than an uptick in injuries and everyone returning, which is not realistic, right?
But the interesting parallel between where we were 12 months ago to where we are now is that we weren't in a relegation battle. We were fed up with boring football, but Roy knew what he was doing. He kept us out of trouble.
Under Roy Hodgson, we weren't in the bottom three in 4 years.
Exactly. So there's a stark difference to where we are now compared to where we were then, and people are vying for Roy's head to be on the block. And I'm a massive fan of Roy. I hugely respect Roy Hodgson as a manager, as a football person, as his experience. You can't put a compression algorithm on experience. And frankly, what we need right now is someone who knows how to get us out of this position. And my honest opinion is that I don't think we've got the regime there right now that's gonna get us out of that. So, I mentioned at the top of the pod that I had a fantastic experience sharing a beer with Ian Dowie back in the early 2000s. And Ian Dowie was famous for coining a term, which is bounce back ability. At the moment, I don't see any bounce back ability, and I'd like to see a new manager or someone new come in. And going to back to the point earlier about Vieira to Roy, just that new regime gives us that bounce back ability, and I don't want to call for any manager's head, but right now I think that's got to be what happens.
Well, I think I'd give my right arm for any sort of bounce back ability right now. And bruv, you talk about how toxic it got last time.
Yeah.
I think give it another three or four games without a win,
we'd be there. We would be there, unfortunately. And it goes from, I appreciate social media is a slither of what the real fan base is feeling, but you know how football stadiums are. You know, when we go to football stadiums, all it takes is for one person to voice an opinion. It carries, it goes around. So one person starts booing, next person starts booing, it gathers momentum. And I think that if we go into the next few run of games without a victory, without, I even think, you know, the Ipswich game, being a Crystal Palace of what, 11 years in the Premier League, Palace should be going to Ipswich and winning that game. I'm not confident at the moment that Palace are going to go to Ipswich and win that game, simply because I think that Ipswich have got that sort of newly promoted desire, that sort of that bitterness about them. And I don't think, well, it's Palace have got what it takes to stand up to that. That's what I'm worried about. I hope I'm wrong, but I'm concerned, bruv, that give it another 2-3 games, we might be back at that toxicity.
Well, they haven't won at home yet, have they? So it'll be classic Palace to give them their first home win. Look, it doesn't look good at the minute. Like you said earlier, though, the Kamada three-match ban, the two-week international break, you know, it's probably come at a good time for Palace, all in all. And, you know, I don't know if the cup thing is a distraction, good or bad, at the minute, whether it gives us an outlet and something to look and hope for. But this is the thing, right? Fast forward till the end of the season, right? If we had this pod again in April, May, June time, and we win the Carabao Cup, Palace finish 15th, 14th, 13th in the league, surely it's a good outcome. So we do have to look at it in the round and the totality of the season. And look, Palace normally come good in the second half. That's what we do.
Well, so many teams, bro, have focused so much on the cup. I mean, I think it's Southampton are still in the quarterfinals, aren't they, as well, in the League Cup, I believe. And they're root bottom of the league. And, yeah, I do hope that Palace obviously do come good and we do find some form. I wonder where it's going to come from. Hopefully, you know, this international break has given the club an opportunity and the manager to work with players that have not been in international duty. And, you know, we can work on different systems, formations, ways to beat Aston Villa, because it becomes an increasingly important game. I don't think anyone expects Palace to go to Villa on Saturday and win, but a point will be treated as free, certainly, which leads you into the next game, which is after Villa, bruv. Help me out. I can edit this bit, it's fine. Newcastle at home, yeah, fair enough, okay. And then you look at Ipswich, right, fair enough. So Ipswich becomes the most important game, doesn't it, let's be honest. But yeah, it's written, isn't it, to go one of two ways. It's written either for Palace to sort of turn this around or to go very far south. And I think I saw a few sort of comments, you know, on message boards and things recently. What would you rather? Palace to win a cup and go down, or Palace to get knocked out against Arsenal and stay up? I'm very much in the sense that get knocked out against Arsenal and stay up, but I was surprised to see how many people chose, you know, winning the cup and getting that silverware and Palace going down. Because for me, well, that's grim. I wouldn't want to go down to the Championship again and deal with that, because the Championship and League One is littered with clubs that have gone down and haven't returned. Charlton, Derby, Sheffield Wednesday, Stoke. You know, Ipswich went down twice, didn't they, as well? Burnley, you know, there are so many clubs that have found it so hard to get back in the Championship. I don't think that's a risk I want to take. But let's be positive, as we always try to be on the 6-pointer podcast. Palace will turn this around, and it's a good start on Saturday with 3 points at Villa Park.
And it's the kind of game we do get 3 points at, right? We're not supposed to, so we do. It's always those games that Palace put out of the hat. And like I say, hopefully a couple of weeks international break will do us some good, and we can push on from there. Right, look, chaps, it's been an absolute pleasure in part two with you. Tom, thank you for joining us as a special guest for your debut on the pod. How have you found it?
Oh, I thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, just expressing my opinions, getting it off my chest. I found it cathartic, if anything. So, listeners at home, I hope you've enjoyed it. I will enjoy this on my commute, listening back to what we've been talking about. It's been a pleasure. I hope to join you again at the end of the season, when hopefully we can reflect and say, do you know where we were in November when we were really depressed? Let's look back on it. Fingers crossed.
with positivity and energy when we finish in 10th yet again.
Yeah, I am positive it will be a conversation in and around that space. Tom, you know how we finish pods off, right? So we always say at Six Pointer on Instagram and Twitter. And don't forget, as always,
up the palace!
The Six Pointer Podcast.